ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the UI Breakfast Podcast. I'm your host, Jane Portman, and today our special guest is Dan Nessler, an experienced director, speaker, and UX blogger. And we're excited to have him talk about storytelling in UX today. This episode is brought to you by Tiny Reminder. Tired of nagging people? Build a simple form, set a reminder schedule, and add recipients. We'll keep sending reminders until they submit a response, providing you peace of mind. Sign up free at tinyreminder.com. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jane. How is it going?
I'm doing great. I hope you got your last name right, because I didn't ask about this one.
Oh, yeah, that's totally fine. No worries.
So, we're going to start with a short blitz questionnaire and then jump into the main topic. How does it sound?
It sounds brilliant. Let's go.
Wonderful. So, the question number one is, what do you do for a living?
All right, for a living. So, I'm currently an experienced director at a web agency called Hindeling Volkert in Zurich, Switzerland. And that is kind of a full-time job. Apart from that, I do a bit of lecturing also. So I lecture at a number of universities in Switzerland. And like once I also find time, I do a bit of like writing about UX, the design process. I mainly do that on Medium, and I've published a couple of articles. And yeah, that is like the main thing I do. But mainly I'm like employed as an experience director at Hindeling Volkert.
Tell us a bit of your background story. How did you get there to being such a prominent, you know, design teacher?
Okay, I wouldn't really say prominent, but happy to go on about this. So, well, basically, I have been working in the digital industry for more than 10 years. I've been working in other jobs before that. And I got to a point, I used to work for a lot of like advertising agencies, like communication agencies, like some well-known name, such as like Young Bonmet, Schultz and Friends, or Publicis. And yeah, I had been working in the digital departments of these agencies. So I had always like been in sort of UX back in the days, you wouldn't really call it UX. But I got to the point where I got a bit like, not frustrated, but I got a bit stuck in my career where I was like, okay, I'm mainly doing advertising here, and I'm selling like I'm doing websites for companies to sell choco bars or whatever. And so I, at some point, like 2 years ago, I quit my job and I was like, I need to do something more. And I went to Manchester and I started a master's program at Hyper Island. Where I studied experience, like digital experience design, and that was really like, that was a great move for me personally. I really like expanded my horizon. I got new ideas, new impressions, and lots of good energy out of that. And so when I came back, I started doing, like, I came back from Manchester, back to Zurich, and I started doing my master thesis, and I got lucky to be able to collaborate with Hindeling Volkert, like the company I'm working for now. Mm-hmm. And so basically, like once my master thesis was done, I had to look for a job. I got a couple of job offers. And yeah, then at some point, these guys approached me and they were like, oh, don't you just want to work for us? And yeah, I accepted the job. And that's how I got to the job. And apart from that, like, as we said and as mentioned, like I do a bit of lecturing and a bit of writing, and there was actually something like the writing bit was something that I started during my my master courses. We got really encouraged to do so, and I kind of like discovered that it was part of my learning process to just like write stuff down, condense like the learnings from my course, from the things that I had been doing, and publish them, and like I just started putting things on Medium, and I only did it for myself at the beginning, and at some point like it seemed that some people found interest in it as well, and I got some articles that yeah they've been a bit viral, you could say, and I got approached a lot, and that's how I really like found pleasure in doing that as well. Like
wonderful.
Basically sharing my learnings.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious, what was your master thesis about?
So I did a master thesis on the topic of new and no user interfaces. So designing experiences and interaction for no and new user interfaces. Like when I did my master's last year, there was like the whole chatbot hype. So everybody had the impression like that there was, well, I mean, I'd still be able to the next big thing though, but like the hype has gone away for a bit. Like, but so I focused on how to design experiences and interactions for basically like interfaces that are not necessarily visual. So basically going into the whole conversational topic, also voice a bit. It was kind of broad, but I also applied like one of my goals was also to apply like a design process framework I had come up with. And to see how that could be applied in such a project.
Well, indeed, this topic has been very trending and still is, I think. Since I can take advantage of this situation, can I get your opinion about the topic in a few sentences? What would be your top recommendations about designing for, let's say, voice-driven UIs or chatbots, conversational UX?
Well, that is a good question. Like, I couldn't really give like a finite answer to that in a way that, I mean, companies are still experimenting. From what I have seen, it is still about the interaction. Like, even though like there is no visual interface, for example, it is still a lot about interaction. So, giving feedback to the user, a user needs to be capable of understanding the way the user communicates with like the computer, like the voice assistant or whatever it is. And I found that like we worked on a chatbot, and that was sometimes a really tricky thing. And I feel, well, as I see it, like a couple of the big companies are still struggling of getting that right at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry for the vague question. It was about, you know, to tell us about the whole design industry in two sentences, which is not a viable question. But yeah, it was good to hear your take. What does your typical day look like?
Typical day, I think, well, you probably have heard that answer a lot, like all days are a bit different. What I do, like one thing I do or have as a routine is that, well, I have a really like short commute, so I live like 2 to 3 minutes from the place where I work, so I do not really get to spend time on public transportation or on my bike or something. And so what I started to do was that I often go for a run in the morning, and what I do there, I listen to podcasts a lot. And I've got like my favorite podcast list. Like, obviously yours is among those as well.
Oh, thank you.
And I had to say that now. And so that is something that I do like on a regular basis. I try to like really like go for a run, listen to a podcast, get inspired. I find it a really good way to get new input, because you don't always have the time to read, or like when you are on a run, you can't necessarily read. And so that's what I do before I go to the office. And like at the office, like it really depends on the projects and how I'm involved in. I do some UX research. I do a lot of conceptual work. So we do mainly websites, web applications or apps. So I do a lot of wireframing, prototyping. There's a lot of obviously meetings, workshops, brainstorms, ideation sessions, whatever. Like what you have in a digital agency, a lot of that is involved there.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of hands-on work, you are primarily in the research and prototyping phase.
Yeah, I'm not like my original education wasn't in a visual design area, so I don't have this typical visual designer background. I do a bit of design for myself. I mean, I open up Sketch once in a while and do stuff, but we've got people here that are loads better, obviously. So I don't really focus in that, and I try to like play my strengths in other areas than actually designing, like visually designing, UI designing, etc. So I go to a point where I do like wireframes, high fidelity wireframes and prototypes.
Mm-hmm. Just curious, how is it organized in your agency? Do you have a special, you know, a creative director who manages visual designers, or is it you who has, you know, the final say over their work?
We have the two founders, like Michael Hinderling and Michael Volkert, and Michael Hinderling is more like the guy on the visual side, and we're not a huge agency, and so we've got a really flat hierarchy. So there is not too many, let's say we've got an intern, then we've got a junior, then there's a senior, then there's a team leader. So it's all really like flat, and we collaborate a lot, and depending on what it is, like obviously, like it's a founder run company, so they have their say as well, and they take it really seriously, so that what's released in their name also is in their best interest, and like suits their taste and what they like and what like they expect from like the visual appearance. So our company is like highly regarded for like our visual excellence.
Wonderful. What is your next big thing for you personally?
That is a really good thing. So since I'm working full time here, and usually you get to work at an agency, you get to work a bit more than what's on your contract. But so I really enjoy writing. So writing blog posts and also teaching, and I wanna like put some more energy in doing so. So some more writing, some more teaching. Just need to find the time. Really, that's the main thing.
All right, awesome. Now let's talk about storytelling in UX. There is a great article you have out there. I'm going to link to it in the show notes about storytelling. That's how I came up with the topic for this conversation. But first, I'd like to refer to a story which happened to me like half a year ago. I was at the Next Web conference in Amsterdam, and there was a storytelling workshop. And I was super excited that somebody is going to tell me, you know, how to incorporate the principles into my UX work. But instead, I just got recommendations how to integrate different, let's say, rich media and other ways into actually telling actual real life stories. That's not exactly the thing that I was interested in. So today I'm super happy to have you and really incorporating the principles into our typical everyday UX. So, could you give your, you know, overview? How do you see those applied into the regular UX process?
All right. That is a bit of a huge question. There's different principles I usually like talk about, or I also like or talk about in my lectures at university, for example. So I and you see that in, if you have read the article or people have read the article, I talk about these six principles. So every story needs a reason. Basically, that is the starting ground where you want to start every project. And the interesting thing is that when you look at all these, like the six principles I kind of like list, and there's always a bit of an analogy to the discipline of UX. So if we talk about like a good reason, it's always the question of the, like, why are we doing something? Like, what do we want to achieve? Like, what is the underlying problem or challenge that we are actually facing? And we need to be really clear. And oftentimes, like in real work or real, in everyday work, like you're confronted with clients that they want something from you, but they might not even really know what they want. They just want a new website. But they don't really know why they want a new website, for example. And sometimes it makes real sense to spend some time and go through, I mean, this is like a well-known one, like the Simon Sinek Golden Circle. It's just like a really, well, not simple when you apply it, but from an understanding point of view, like start with the why, start from the inside out, why are you doing something? Yeah, that is like, that is kind of the starting point for every story. And then like every story, as you say, every story needs a hero, like a main character. Like, and in storytelling, you obviously refer to the main character as the hero. And when we look at UX again, then basically like we talk about people that we're serving. So we're talking and looking at UX again, we use in UX, we use personas. So, and you want to make sure that this persona is the actual hero of your story and that you don't make your company or your product a hero. And I think that is something that you also often get to see in reality, that we also in our craft, like web design, we take pride in doing great designs, new interactions, new patterns, whatever, like include new bits and pieces of technology just for the sake of doing it. And that can be a great thing, but then we sometimes like are at danger of losing our main hero, like our client, our user out of sight. So that is like the thing about the main character.
Though, sorry to interrupt you. There was a great analogy by Samuel Hulick, who made a drawing of a Mario hero and a flower, and showing that the actual product is not the flower or the mushrooms or something, but it is the grown up version of Mario, twice in size, the improved version of the user that we are actually selling here. That totally resonates with what you're saying with it. Hero and the user.
That's a really nice analogy. You need to send me that one, because I really like the fact it's basically like you enabling Mario to like become something better and something bigger, and like getting better at his job to save the princess, basically, and making him like bigger, better, and stronger. And that's exactly like what this is about, I think.
Yep. So let's continue to the remaining four principles. You just recapped the two of those, and there are four more ahead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's more of that, I'm afraid. So there is, like, once you've got your character, you want to start with a conflict. And like a conflict, we kind of talked about the reason. And then often you get a problem to solve. Like a designer, you're confronted with like a challenge or a problem. And you want to keep that in mind throughout the entire process. Like when you're designing something, you sometimes have to step back and you need to really like look at what is the underlying problem. So in storytelling, you talk about starting with a conflict. A lot of like Hollywood blockbusters still work that way, that like there's a conflict at the beginning, and then like there is the introduction of the film or whatever. And then it's about solving this problem that we're facing there. And that is pretty much something that you have in UX as well. And in storytelling, like there is this simple formula called like story equals hero plus dilemma plus an attempt at liberation. That is like a quote by Gottschall. And it kind of like, it's a really nice analogy to UX design. So we have a user, this user's got an issue, he's got a problem and tries to like get it solved. And we need to step in and help.
Of course, I cannot avoid asking about examples from your agency work or maybe other projects. What were the typical dilemmas, conflicts that you have resolved? How did you represent that within the UX?
Like one tiny, really tiny example that I like to bring up. It's not like a real like huge user issue, but like for example, we work a lot for airlines. For example, we work for Swiss International Airlines, and like a couple of years ago we redesigned their website. And well, we kind of like, we don't do everything, so we do front end, we do back end, but like in like large projects you depend on so many more parties. There's so many more like I don't know, there's APIs, there's like other basically other systems that you need to connect to, etc. And so one issue we were facing there is that we couldn't like solve it ourselves, that like accessing different databases would like generate loading time. So just the user would just have to wait and see a loading animation. And so since we mainly did work on the visual side, we were like, oh, how can we solve that? We can't really solve the technology, and we're not capable of solving the API because there's different systems that we can't really influence. But what we did instead, we kind of like did a small micro interaction. So rather than micro animation, basically of a loader that is not just a regular loader, but rather it is like tiny airplanes that fly around in circles. Mm-hmm. And so when the user basically gets to see, we can't avoid the waiting time, but the user, rather than getting to see like the really annoying like spinning wheel, he gets like a nice little animation that is something different and that brings some joy in the waiting process. And like in user testing, we actually found out also that people like really enjoyed that, and it created some joy at this point. And it helped the user in a way, even though that we didn't have a direct like impact on the overall issue or the overall challenge, because like they sometimes just really big.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's more about making the user feel right, not even actually affecting the technical things.
Well, I mean, you don't get to like, you don't always get to solve everything. Sometimes you need to like make baby steps towards a solution. And mm-hmm. as an agency, like you get to work for, and if you get to work for huge corporations, then you cannot always just like change everything the way you would like to. Obviously, like it's always nice to say we don't have any waiting time on your website, but often like we can't like have an impact everywhere, and so we need to like solve the problems where we can solve them also.
Mm-hmm. In our little SaaS ecosystem, we always say that the product needs to exist because of a certain pain. What do you think? Does the pain actually relate to the reason part or to the conflict part of the story?
I think the pain is probably more the conflict, because I don't necessarily think that as a designer, you always have to like solve a pain. It's about, I mean, obviously when you talk about UX, we talk a lot about usability and making things right. So the user has like, invests minimum effort. But I think like UX is about more. It's also about like if you look at Don Norman and his emotional design, I really like this differentiation he makes, these three layers of design, talking about visceral design, behavioral, and reflective design. And if you are more someone that is more, let's say, in art, like your sole goal can just be to create joy and pleasure, and you don't necessarily have to solve a problem. So the problem, in my opinion, goes into the conflict part if you like relate it back to the storytelling bit.
Mm-hmm. The next step is the structure. Tell us about that. Mm-hmm.
So structure, I find that really useful, and I came across this analogy once. Like I've got a degree in economics as well, and if you look at customer relationship management and product life cycles, there is this so-called 3R marketing principle that divides the life cycle of a product or customer into three stages. So first stage is recruitment. So for every product or service, like you need to recruit your users, so you need to make them aware of your product, generate more like create some interest and the desire for your client to buy and use a product. Then once you've got a client, you're in the retention phase, so the user is using your product, you've got some ups and downs, and then you get to a point, be it with an iPhone or with any product, where you get to the end of the life cycle, and then like there is the decision for the user to either ditch the product or buy a new one of your brand. Or renew a service, for example. And this is a really interesting structure, because if you overlay it with the typical storytelling structure of the 3X, they perfectly align. So in storytelling, and there has been the case for hundreds of years, there has been this structure called the 3X. And so you've got an opening act, the act one, introduction, then you've got the main act where the main story happens, and then you've got the final act after the climax. And so that is a really interesting concept. And if you look at experience map, for example, I find that a really like nice overall structure to add to an experience map. So basically you've got recruitment, retention, recovery, which in the best case is advocacy also. So that's just something where these two disciplines align again. And as I also say, it's like, bullet points don't really make a good story, and touch points don't make a good experience. In both disciplines, it is about connecting the dots and creating this flow, be it for the reader of your story or the user of your experience.
Yes, absolutely. We just had a few episodes ago an episode about ending experiences. This aligns with your points perfectly well, because we often overlook the ending experiences of products and services.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's really interesting you bring that up, because I've just purchased the book, Ends.
Oh, wonderful.
Joe used to be a lecturer at my Hyper Island course in Manchester. So that's how I came across him. And I really like his theory and like his approach of ending experiences and how this part, like this recovery part of the process and the life cycle, is often overlooked. Good episode, by the way.
Yes, linking to it in the show notes as well, and to the book too. So so the structure, we've kind of dealt with that. The next one you mentioned is awareness.
Yeah. So, I mean, like in storytelling, you talk about the creation of awareness, and awareness in our like highly connected world and in the amount and the like really overwhelming amount of information, news and data that we're exposed to, creating awareness is really important, and in many ways in UX as well. And that is something that I have kind of like brought with me from the like advertising industry, and sometimes was something that I kind of like got a bit bored and annoyed with, but then found like really pleasure in, because the advertising industry and like agencies there, for example, that are geniuses when it comes to promoting their own work and selling their own work and making people aware of their work. And that is something that also in UX, you kind of like as a self-employed designer, you need to do, but also agencies need to do. They need to make people aware of their work. And at the same time, it is also good to share your stuff and get feedback, because other people can benefit from that as well. And in storytelling, you often do that with like evoking emotions, so joy, surprise, sadness, anger, fear. And obviously in UX, we mainly want to create joy and joy for our user, I'd say.
I'm a bit at a loss here, because awareness can be applied to so many stages. It can be applied to marketing, as you said, that people should be aware of the product. And it feels to me that it can also be applied to, you know, the transparency of how the product works, so that the user stays updated, see how the value is generated, see how, you know, updates come up. And our goal is to create positive emotions about that.
Oh, totally. So, I mean, I wouldn't say like all these principles, they are not just to be applied at one particular point of a product or process. They can really come in handy throughout an entire process, and also at every stage of a product or product design. Like as you just said, like if you talk about design, for example, like creating awareness is about having like in a digital interface, having affordances that kind of like making clear that you can do something or there is like some interaction to it. So, but mainly speaking, if you look at it as a whole, it's about like UX is about the creation of joy for our users as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And the last but not least is virality. I have no clue how, because in my product experience, I have never managed to make anything viral, even though, like, for example, one of my latest products was supposed to be viral by nature because it's client-facing. So what can a designer do to make their product viral, spreading like wildfire?
Yeah, I mean, like a good thing and like something you do as well, like you share your work, like you try to be public with what you do. So you have your podcast, other people write on Medium, other people, they run successful Dribble accounts. But I think in the end, it's all about sharing what you do. So like sharing your work, and obviously the emotional bit comes in here again. So if you create designs, or even just a micro animation that is like somehow genius, I don't know, or is somehow just like really clever or appealing or just nice and fun to look at, then that is something that people are going to enjoy and people are going to share it. And especially like I've noticed a lot with my writing that, I mean, I get more and less successful posts, and a lot about virality or virality in writing also comes from like projecting your personal thoughts on something in a different manner. So rather than just like copy pasting something, trying to display something or to make something up in your words, and so that then you've already got like a modified product in the end.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any favorite tools on how to embed those viral components into apps? I don't know. To my mind, referral programs, share buttons. Anything else you particularly like?
If it is just about the pure act of sharing, obviously like integrating sharing buttons is a helpful thing. But as the example I brought up before, like the loading animation, that is just like a tiny interaction, a tiny animation within an entire web product, if you're going to call it like that. And mm-hmm. And these small joyful bits, they kind of like highlight that you paid attention to like details and that you took some time in maybe researching like sort of how to solve a problem or just things that we take for granted. Like a lot today is standardized with like Bootstrap and standard free frameworks or just website builders. I mean, like everybody is nowadays capable of taking Squarespace or any other service and create a beautiful website within a couple of hours. But like if you want to see the work that stands out, you go back to the FWA or you go to awards.com and you see all these designers and professionals that put a lot of energy and work and thought into how things can look different, and they challenge often the status quo also. And I think that is an important thing to do also in our discipline.
So being more, you know, meta with your product, not just immediate sharing opportunities, but making the product memorable at all levels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fully.
I wonder, so there is a range of being, you know, super pragmatic and super creative. And for some reason, I don't know, just from my experience, I definitely fall into the very pragmatic camp. where do you strive for? Do you strive for your new products at your agency to be super creative or actually pragmatically solving boring problems?
I mean, we've got all sorts of problems. I couldn't really generalize that. We work for large corporations on the one hand, where we, let's say we get one piece of the cake and we collaborate with other companies that might specialize in backend or whatever services. So we collaborate with them and we've got like huge UX departments on the client side. They already deliver like, almost finished let's say wireframes and prototypes, and we more in like the, let's say the color part of the work where we need to like make something look nice. But then also we get to really like creative projects where we can experiment and approach things from like a different position and a different angle and try something new. It really depends on the project.
Mm-hmm. I hear you very well. So As we're wrapping up today's episode, the structure of the story is definitely obvious. What would be your top piece of advice for those who want to make their, you know, UX flow more creative, more dynamic using your principles? What would be the starting point for them?
The starting point is, in my opinion, really know why you want to do something. What do you want to achieve? Like, what is also your goal? Like, how do you want to excel? Like, how do you want to build, I don't know, your strengths, or learn something new, and how can you implement that in your product or process?
Mm-hmm. So we're going back to stage one, which is the reason, and it can be not just helping users, but also a whole other range of reasons why your company even exists.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that is a good point to start in many aspects. And yeah, in UX, we often obviously it's all about the user, but we sometimes confuse UX with usability. And as said, I think there is, especially if you come into the creative state or the creative process, sometimes the user is just someone that enjoys a laugh, or someone that enjoys a piece of art, and then you're not necessarily talking about solving problems. But also professionals in our industry can be the users, and they might have not exactly the problem you want to solve, but they want to be inspired, and they want to create new stuff and find other people's work and be inspired by it.
Wonderful. So that leaves hope for the art for the sake of art to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dan. Your insights were very helpful. Where can people find you and your work online?
I've got a website, obviously, dannessler.com, and that kind of links to my profile. There's not too much on my website, really, but there's a link to my Medium profile. So I'm also called Dan Nessler on Medium. You find me with that name. And I've got a Twitter account that is called Nessie420, like the Loch Ness monster. And I don't think I need to explain the 420. And I don't want to go into the history. It's a bit of an old handle, and I haven't managed to get it changed yet.
Thank you so much for joining us today. And I hope your creative efforts bloom, and your storytelling does too.
Thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
You too.
If you enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave a review on iTunes. It will help other people discover this podcast.